And then coming up in just a few minutes, great documentary that's running on HBO this month. And you sports fans remember the legendary sports commentator Marty Glickman. Well, he was a gifted Jewish American athlete who was denied the opportunity to represent the United States at the 1936 Berlin Olympics and went on to become one of the most revered sportscasters in history. And a documentary on the legendary Marty Glickman is actually airing on HBO this entire month. And James Friedman, who wrote, produced, and directed the documentary called Glickman, will join us this morning. So stay where you are. We'll talk to James Friedman in a few minutes. The documentary is called Glickman, One Voice Changed the Sports World Forever. We'll be back. Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by CIT. Small and middle market businesses count on CIT for innovative financing solutions. Visit CIT.com to learn more. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. Glad you can join me on this Saturday morning. And my guest is James Friedman, who is the director, producer, writer, and narrator of Glickman, One Voice Changed the Sports World Forever. James, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Anne.
This is exciting because I knew the great Marty Glickman when I was first starting out in my sports broadcasting career in the mid-'80s and through the 90s. Just a lovely, eloquent man. Definitely revered amongst his colleagues in the sports business, and I understand that you met him producing his late night sports program in New York as a high school senior.
Yes, I was 17. I used to drive into Manhattan with my older brother and watch him produce the show. One day, I'm sitting in the booth, and my brother tells Marty he has been called up to the Army Reserves. Marty will need to find another producer. Without missing a beat, Marty Glickman pointed directly into the booth at me and said, Jimmy could do it. And I literally turned around expecting to see another guy named Jimmy sitting there. There wasn't. And for the rest of that year, I produced his show. He taught me how to get the scores off the wire, get screen calls, schedule commercials, pretty heady stuff for a 17-year-old boy. But what I took away from that experience, you know, people say, well, weren't you intimidated, 17, working with Marty Glickman? And the answer was no, because he never treated me like a high school kid. He always treated me as his producer, and it gave me a professional confidence I have to this very day.
So obviously there was something he saw in you immediately that made him feel comfortable with you and made him know that you could handle the job.
Either that or I was the only other guy in the booth. I don't know.
Well, so then you kept up your relationship, your working relationship with him throughout his career, or how did that work?
Not completely, because I went off in a different direction, but I do know when I went to Washington University in St. Louis and later film school at Stanford, and when I would do that stuff, I'd get a call from him, you know, and he'd say, why haven't you called me? I said, what are you talking about? He said, the Giants are in town. I need a spotter for the football game. Get in here. And it was like, that's the kind of guy he was. He was just, he reached out to so many people. You know, when I started to make this film, I had never made a film before. And I'm calling people cold. Do you want to be in my documentary? And, you know, they're listening, like, how'd you get my number? You know. And the second I said Marty Glickman, it's, where do you want me?
Yeah, that's incredible. Absolutely. As I said, he had such respect amongst his peers. And this is your first documentary?
Yes.
Wow. What were you doing in between?
I was a working writer.
Because you said you went to film school.
Yeah, I was a working writer in Hollywood for, over 25 years. And my writing partner had her second child and wanted to take some time off. And I decided to make this documentary on Marty.
Isn't that great? And I see that Martin Scorsese is the executive producer, so your Hollywood connection certainly came in handy.
I didn't know Martin Scorsese. I wish I had. The film played the Santa Barbara Film Festival, and Ari Emanuel, the head of William Morris Endeavor, called me up, read about it, called me up, asked to see the film. And 1 week later, I was sitting in his office, and he said, you know who should see this film? Martin Scorsese. And I'm thinking, well, who am I to deny that? So I 2 days later, I received an email from Marty saying he loved the film and wanted to release it through his company on HBO.
Oh, isn't that great?
Pretty much a typical week in my life.
Exactly, right? What a great opportunity. And so now it debuts on HBO Monday, August 26th, 9 to 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, exclusively on HBO. And then it has various play dates, as they say, throughout the month of August and September. And well, what was it like to revisit his history after you worked for him so many years ago?
Well, you know, it's almost embarrassing to say this, but I was so naive. I only knew Marty Glickman when I worked for him as the voice of the New York Football Giants. And I didn't know he was this great an athlete. You know, for your listeners, Marty Glickman, he didn't talk about it on the air. He was too modest. He was the third fastest runner in the world in 1936 behind Jesse Owens and Ralph Metcalf. He's a great football player at Syracuse. How many announcers, broadcasters, would not be mentioning their own history in the booth? But to Marty, the game was the thing. And, you know, he had a saying, the only person who tunes in to listen to the broadcaster is the broadcaster's mother. So people just didn't know about this background. And I had heard stuff about the Olympics, but he didn't talk about it unless he was asked every 4 years. When there was Olympics, he would be asked. So I learned an enormous amount as I researched this. And I always knew his story was fascinating, but I had no idea what an incredible life this man led.
He actually told me in person a little bit about this story about, you know, he was denied the chance to represent the United States at the 1936 Berlin Olympics. And I remember just being in awe listening to the story. I could not believe it and hearing it from you know, Marty Glickman himself.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that, because you obviously used a lot of archival footage that was just incredible.
You want me to go into what happened in Berlin?
Yeah, sure.
Yes. Well, for the listeners, this is the Nazi Olympics, what they were called. It's Hitler's Olympics, where he is espousing the myth of Nazi Aryan supremacy, only to watch all of the American black athletes, Jesse Owens, Ralph Metcalf, John Woodruff, smash, as Marty says, the smithereens, I love that word, this myth. Well, the next scheduled race was the 400-meter relay. Marty Glickman and another Jewish runner, Sam Stoller, were scheduled to run. It was said we were favored to win by 15 yards, and the only way we would lose is if we dropped the baton. Well, Marty, the day of the race, was replaced, along with Sam Stoller, by Owens and Metcalf. And there are many different versions of what happened, but one version is that the assistant track coach, Dean Crama, wanted to keep his two USC runners on the team, and that's why Marty and Sam were replaced. Another much more, I think, correct version is that the head of the U.S. Olympic Committee, Avery Brundage, who later was proven to be a Nazi sympathizer, wanted to appease Adolf Hitler, who could not, the thought of two Jewish athletes standing on the winning podium was abhorrent to him. And in fact, 2 years after the Olympics in 1938, when the Nazis were building the German embassy in Washington, D.C., they awarded the construction contract to Avery Brundage's company.
I remember, and you talked a little bit about that conflict of interest in the documentary. Avery Brundage is chairman of the U.S. Olympic Committee. Put in, as you say, Owens and what? It was Ralph Metcalf, I think, replacing Glickman and Sam Stoller, the only Jewish athletes on the relay team and, you know, on the American team. Just incredible story. And yet, it didn't prevent Marty Glickman from achieving greatness. It might have maybe pushed him more, do you think?
Well, you know, you're hitting on what I felt was the theme of the film, because Sam Stoller, who was told he wasn't going to run on his 21st birthday, happy birthday, Marty felt this affected him deeply his whole life and never quite recovered. And I realized, you know, my film, the heart of my film is what happens when an 18-year-old boy's dreams are crushed by racism and prejudice. Do they become bitter? Do they triumph? Marty Glickman not only triumphed, but he used sports as a means of transcending the divisions caused by race, class, and religion. I mean, an incredible, remarkable thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he never, as you say, he never talked that much about it. He certainly didn't sound bitter about it. He, I just remember him telling me the story, just, you know, as a matter of fact, this is what happened. And meanwhile, I'm standing there with my mouth open like, oh, my goodness. And he was not defined by that by any means. As you say, he was so humble, and he never talked about his athletic achievements and that incident.
No, he triumphed with style and grace. However, 50 years after the Berlin Olympics, he was a board member of the Jesse Owens Foundation. He went back to Berlin to Jesse Owens had passed away to celebrate the achievements of Jesse's four gold medals. And he was walking on the track, and all of a sudden, all of this anger and bitterness just erupted out of him. And he started walking around the track, screaming at the top of his lungs, cursing. And Marty Glickman was not a man who did this. And he was stunned that all this anger and bitterness had been stuck inside of him. All the had no idea. But his anger wasn't just specific to how could they do this to me. His anger was how could they do this to any 18-year-old boy.
Sure. I cannot believe he held it in all those years and it came out like that. Just that is, I'm sure, just quite the emotional moment in the documentary. That you covered that piece, obviously.
Yes, he made one more final trip to Berlin, and he went to a Giants exhibition game there, New York Football Giants, and he's sitting in Adolf Hitler's box, and the sideline reporter interviews him and says, you know, how do you feel? And he said, you know, sadness, wonderment. Just a few minutes ago, I was sitting in Adolf Hitler's box. I was there. He was not.
Wow.
And when that plays in front of a theater audience, they erupt in applause.
Wow. Very, very powerful moment in the documentary. So tell me, how did he went on? You know, he really was the father of sports casting and changed the way sports were called and invented a lot of the techniques and style. Talk a little bit about that and his style and what he became known as far as his sports casting career is concerned.
Well, those are two questions. The first question, if I may answer, is Marty Glickman, which people do not know, revolutionized radio basketball play-by-play. And by that I mean he coined many of the phrases broadcasters are using today that they have no idea came from Marty. He came up with the terms the key, the lane, the midcourt stripe, his most famous one, swish. But what he also did was he gave listeners the geography of the court. Prior to Marty Glickman, a broadcast of basketball sounded like this. Liguori passes to Friedman, Friedman scores. You had no idea where anyone was on the court. Marty, very specifically, with Liguori dribbles up the right sideline, throws a behind-the-back pass to Friedman at the top of the key. He banks in a two-handed set shot. You saw the game. As Larry King said, he was television on radio. As Mike Breen said, it was as if his voice were attached to the ball. The other question is, in terms of his, you know, what he loved to teach about broadcasting was he hated how much people talked. He said, you shouldn't be talking this much. You should be able to say it fast with an economy of words and with great feeling. And because he was an athlete, he was able to impart the joy of sport that those athletes were feeling. You felt like a little kid. You know, Marty didn't say, the quarterback is upset on the sidelines. Marty would say, Y.A. Tittle is jumping up and down, stamping his feet like a little kid who had been refused some candy. It was almost poetic that he could come up with that in the moment. Incredible.
That's so interesting. You painted the picture for the radio audiences.
The word side picture. And in fact, one of the things that I tried to do, Marty was such a stickler for saying it simply and with as few words as possible. When I wrote the narration in homage to Marty, I deliberately tried to write it, you know, as sparsely as possible. And then when it was time to come up with a title for the film, I couldn't think of one. I just knew I wanted something that represented Marty. Straightforward, plain, simple, honest. And Elliot Gould gave me the title, and it was simply Glickman.
One voice changed the sports world forever.
One word. No, that's the slug line.
That's a little tagline.
It's just Glickman.
Well, that's so appropriate. Everybody knows who you're talking about in sports when you say Glickman. What was his favorite sport to cover?
You know, he didn't have one, but it was he was brilliant at covering a game with movement, and that was basketball, and that was football. And he was just he was so great at both. You know, he probably invented more things in basketball because it was a newer sport. But his broadcasts with the New York Giants, when they had those great teams in the 60s, for any of your listeners who are old enough to remember, and later with the Jets, although he didn't have great teams to broadcast with the Jets, he was just, you know, back in the day, by the way, the games were blacked out when he did the Giant games. So if you the only way to experience a Giants home game was, as they said, I watched it on radio with Marty.
Interesting. I love that. What about the NBA and when the NBA signed a contract with the TV network, he was replaced by Midwestern Voices?
The NBA was a fledgling league, and the commissioner was Jewish, the head of publicity was Jewish, and Marty was Jewish, and the network and the NBA did not want to be perceived as too Jewish when they were trying to bring this product to America. And in fairness to them, your listeners can't hear this from 2013 perspective. They have to understand back then, every movie star changed his name. Dean Martin was Dino Crosetti. I mean, everybody changed their name. It's how things were presented. It's what it was, that apple pie view of America. Well, Marty Glickman was proud of being Jewish, to not change his name, and many people believe lost the opportunity to become a national broadcaster when he was let go by the NBA at that time.
Wow. What did you learn the most, James, when you put this documentary together with all the research and all the, I'm sure you spent a lot of time interviewing different personalities from Marv Albert, Bob Costas, Bill Bradley, Jim Brown, and it took a lot of time to probably find the exact footage that you wanted to incorporate in the film.
Yeah, people say, how long did it take to make the film? A year to make it and 2 years of finding and begging for free footage. The thing I really learned when I was doing this film, and, you know, you're in a room alone. You really don't know how it's going to be perceived. And after what happened to him in Berlin, and then he was also the voice of college basketball, and though he had no part in it when the college basketball scandal hit that really derailed his career, he moved to the NBA. He's knocked off that. For potentially being too Jewish or too New York, however you want to perceive that. And as I was making the film, I got halfway through the film and I'm saying, am I going to lose my audience that this is so, you know, this guy is getting knocked down so many times. Is it going to be sad for them because they like him so much? And I showed it to some filmmaking friends and they said, you're looking at this all wrong. We don't see him being knocked down. We see him getting up every time. And that's what's so incredible about his story. And once that was open to me and I saw that, oh, okay, then I was able to embrace that and really let Marty's story shine, because this guy just refused to give in and made it a point to help so many broadcasters, so many kids. In the 50s and 60s, he instituted the high school football game of the week. Here's a guy who was doing Knick games Friday night, Yonkers Raceway Saturday, and Giants football Sunday afternoon, and he made time to go out to some freezing cold high school on Saturday afternoon and do the games, so at halftime he could show the glee club, the chess club, the debate team, you know, show the public all the wonderful things kids were doing, in addition to working with the police athletic league. I mean, this guy was a mensch.
He just a gem, really fine man, and I just was honored that I had a chance to meet him in my early, you know, sportscasting career. And you captured most of that in Glickman, which airs on Monday, August 26th on HBO at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Congratulations, James. It's your first documentary, writer, producer,
yeah,
director. You decided to kind of do it all on your very first one, huh?
Oh, why not? By the way, there's a lot of fun stuff on my Twitter and website. It's Glickman the Film on Twitter, glickmanthefilm.com. I have clips from the movie, photos of Marty, stories, interviews, and also Facebook Glickman the Film if fans want to check it out.
James Friedman, writer, producer, director, Glickman. Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by CIT. Small and middle market businesses count on CIT for innovative financing solutions. Visit CIT.com to learn more.